A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the metal hierarchy we all seem to take for granted. Gold at the top, silver second, then copper or bronze bringing up the rear. Wedding rings, credit cards, Olympic medals, video game loot. Everywhere you look, the ranking is the same. He wants to know whether this is about availability or whether the story is more nuanced. And honestly, the more you dig into this, the stranger it gets.
It really does. Because here's the thing that hooked me. The gold, silver, bronze medal system at the Olympics feels ancient. Feels like it must go back to the Greeks. It doesn't. The 1904 St. Sevidia say, Louis Gaines were the first to award gold, silver, and bronze for first, second, and third place. Before that, winners at the ancient Olympics got olive wreaths. That's it.
Of course, it was St.
What's that supposed to mean?
Louis inventing the global symbol of athletic hierarchy in 1904 feels very American. Anyway, the Olympics codified something much older. The ranking was already there. They just put medals on it.
And that's the core puzzle. Why this ranking? Gold, then silver, then copper or bronze. It shows up in cultures that never traded with each other. Ancient Egypt, Mesopotamia, the Indus Valley, pre-Columbian Mesoamerica, China. All of them independently arrived at gold as the supreme metal, silver as the runner-up, and copper or its alloys as the third tier. That's not a coincidence. Something deeper is going on.
We've got three candidate explanations to test. One, it's pure availability, a simple scarcity gradient. Two, it's about physical properties, the actual material differences between these metals. Three, it's path dependence, a historical accident that got locked in and reinforced over millennia.
I think the answer is all three, but in a specific sequence. Chemistry gave gold an initial edge. Psychology and religion amplified that edge into something cosmic. And then economics and institutions locked the whole thing in place so firmly that we're still using it to design credit card tiers in 2026.
Let's start with the chemistry. What makes gold actually different?
Gold is the most noble metal. That's a technical term. It means gold doesn't oxidize, doesn't tarnish, doesn't corrode in any natural environment. You can bury a gold artifact in wet soil for 5,000 years, dig it up, wipe off the dirt, and it looks exactly the way it did the day someone made it.
Silver doesn't do that.
It reacts with hydrogen sulfide in the air. That's what creates the black silver sulfide layer. It's why your silverware needs polishing. And copper is even more reactive. It forms that green patina, copper carbonate, which is why the Statue of Liberty is green instead of copper-colored. Gold just sits there, inert, forever.
If you're an ancient jeweler making something for a king or a god, and you want it to still look impressive in 100 years, gold is the obvious choice.
We have artifacts that prove exactly this. The royal tombs of Ur, circa 2600 BCE, that's in modern Iraq. Queen Puabi's burial included this extraordinary headdress made of gold leaves and lapis lazuli. It's in the Penn Museum now. The gold leaves are as bright as the day they were hammered out 4,600 years ago. Silver vessels were in the tomb too, but they were never used for the most sacred objects. Silver was for practical things. Gold was for eternity.
What about the workability? I've heard gold is easier to shape than other metals.
Gold can be hammered into leaf 1/10 of a micron thick, that's 1/500th, the thickness of a human hair. A single ounce of gold can be beaten into a sheet covering nearly 100 square feet. You can do that with stone tools. No furnace required, no complex alloys. Silver and copper are malleable too, but they work harden. You have to keep annealing them, heating and cooling, or they crack. Gold just keeps stretching.
Early metalworkers would have noticed immediately that gold was the cooperative metal. The one that didn't fight back.
That matters enormously when your toolkit is a rock and a fire. The first known gold artifacts are from the Varna Necropolis in Bulgaria, dated to 4560 BCE. That's before the Bronze Age even started. Humans were working gold before they figured out how to smelt copper from ore.
before the Bronze Age. So gold was the first metal humans intentionally shaped.
The very first. And that probably cemented its special status from the beginning. Now, let's talk about scarcity. This is where most people assume the answer lives. Gold is rare, therefore gold is valuable. And the numbers do line up. Copper is about 60 parts per million in the Earth's crust. Silver is about 0.075 parts per million. Gold is about 0.004 parts per million. So yes, each tier is roughly an order of magnitude rarer than the one below it.
That can't be the whole story.
It absolutely can't, and here's why. Platinum is rarer than gold, 0.003 parts per million. Yet pre-Columbian South Americans treated platinum as worthless. The Inca called it unripe gold. They literally threw it away. They found these nuggets of platinum in riverbeds alongside gold, and their reaction was basically, this stuff isn't done yet. They couldn't melt it. Platinum's melting point is over 1700 degrees Celsius, compared to gold's just over 1000. Their furnaces couldn't touch it. So despite being rarer, platinum had no value because it was unusable.
Which tells us scarcity alone doesn't drive the hierarchy. You have to be able to do something with the metal.
That's why platinum didn't enter the European value system until the 18th century, when metallurgists finally figured out how to reach those temperatures. Before that, platinum was cheaper than silver. Spanish colonists in Colombia actually considered platinum a nuisance. It contaminated gold deposits, and they'd discard it. Today, platinum trades at a premium to gold. The value flipped entirely because of processing technology.
The scarcity argument needs a companion, workability. The metal has to be both rare and usable.
But there's a third chemical property that I think is even more important, and it's the one nobody talks about first.
Gold is yellow.
Gold is the only yellow pure metal. Every other metal is some shade of silver gray or reddish. Copper is reddish, but it tarnishes. Silver, platinum, aluminum, iron, zinc, they're all in the white to gray spectrum. Gold is uniquely, unmistakably yellow. And across virtually every ancient culture, yellow was the color of the sun.
Ra in Egypt, Indi in Inca religion, Surya in Hinduism.
The connection is universal. The sun is the source of life, the most powerful visible thing in the world, and here's a metal that shares its color and also happens to be incorruptible and easy to work. That's not just a valuable material, that's a divine material. The Inca built an entire garden of gold at the Coricancha Temple in Cusco. Life-sized gold corn stalks, gold llamas, gold butterflies. Gold was reserved for Inti, the sun god. Silver was for Quilla, the moon goddess. The hierarchy was literally cosmic.
That's consistent across cultures that had no contact.
Egypt, same thing. The flesh of the gods was said to be gold. The pharaoh's burial mask, gold. In China, gold was associated with the emperor and the sun, while silver was linked to the moon and the empress. In Hinduism, the goddess Lakshmi is depicted with gold coins flowing from her hands. I could keep going. This isn't one culture's quirk, it's a pattern.
The sequence is... chemistry makes gold uniquely stable and workable. Color links it to the sun, and the sun link elevates it to divine status. Silver gets the moon. Copper gets...
copper gets utility, and that's actually interesting. Copper and its alloy bronze, which is about 90% copper, 10% tin, were never primarily symbolic metals. They were working metals. The Bronze Age, roughly 3300 to 1200 BCE, was defined by bronze tools and weapons. Bronze was the high technology of its era. But once iron smelting arrived around 1200 BCE, bronze was demoted.
Bronze went from cutting-edge technology to decorative third place.
Its color reinforced that. Copper's reddish-brown and its green patina visually distinguish it from gold and silver. It doesn't look like a lesser version of the top tier. It looks like its own thing. That made it perfect for signaling not quite the top, but still in the game.
Like adopting a feral cat.
I'm not sure I follow that one.
Bronze is the feral cat of metals. Useful, distinct, clearly not a house pet, but you keep it around.
I think that metaphor might need more workshopping, but the point stands. Now let's talk about the path dependence piece. Because chemistry and psychology got gold to the top, but what kept it there for 5,000 years? Religion is a huge part of it. Exodus chapter 25 specifies gold for the Ark of the Covenant. The Quran, Surah Al-Kahf, describes paradise with gold bracelets. Hindu temples were adorned with gold. Buddha stupas in Southeast Asia are covered in gold leaf. Once a metal gets written into sacred texts, its status becomes extremely hard to dislodge.
Because questioning the metal hierarchy becomes questioning the divine order.
And then you add monetary systems on top of that. Gold was too valuable for everyday transactions. A single gold coin in medieval England could buy a horse. So silver became the working currency for most of human history. The Spanish pieces of eight, the Chinese Caixi silver ingots, the British pound sterling, which literally meant a pound of sterling silver.
Silver's position as number two wasn't just symbolic, it was functional.
Silver was valuable enough to be portable, but common enough for daily trade. That sweet spot locked it into second place in a way that pure symbolism never could. And here's where the story gets really interesting, the Potosi effect.
The Silver Mountain in Bolivia.
The Spanish discovered Potosi in 1545. Between 1556 and 1783, that single mine produced roughly 45,000 tons of silver. Between 1500 and 1800, about 80% of the world's silver came from Bolivia and Mexico. This flood of silver was so massive it caused inflation in Spain and even in Ming Dynasty China, which was on the other side of the planet.
Yet silver didn't lose its place in the hierarchy.
It didn't budge. At certain points, silver was briefly more abundant in European markets than copper, and the symbolic rank held. That's path dependence in action. The ranking had been so thoroughly embedded in religion, in coinage, in royal regalia, in dowry traditions, that no amount of supply could dislodge it.
What about the Bronze Age collapse? That seems like a moment when the whole system could have reset.
Around 1200 BCE, most of the major civilizations in the Eastern Mediterranean collapsed within a single generation. The Mycenaeans, the Hittites, the Egyptian New Kingdom was severely weakened. Trade networks that supplied tin for bronze, making disintegrated. And yes, bronze lost its primacy. Iron took over for tools and weapons. But the symbolic hierarchy of metal survived. Gold remained supreme. Silver remained second. Bronze just slid from essential strategic material to third-place decorative metal. The ranking didn't reset, it just absorbed the disruption.
The hierarchy predates the Bronze Age, survives its collapse, and then gets reinforced by every major institution that comes after.
Then it gets codified in the modern era in ways the ancients never could have imagined. Let's talk about credit cards.
The Gold Card.
American Express launched the Gold Card in 1966. It was a premium product, an annual fee for enhanced benefits. The metal hierarchy was so culturally legible that they didn't need to explain what gold meant. Everyone already knew. Then, in 1984, they launched the Platinum Card at $250 a year. That's about $700 in today's money. And they chose platinum deliberately. It signaled above gold by using a metal that was rarer and harder to work, even though most people had never held a platinum object in their lives.
Then the Centurion Card in 1999, the Black Card.
The Centurion broke the hierarchy entirely. It's made of anodized titanium, it's black, and it's invitation only. The move from gold to platinum to black titanium is fascinating because it shows what happens when the traditional hierarchy runs out of room. Once you've used gold and silver and platinum, what's left? You either keep adding metals, titanium, palladium, rhodium, or you break the system entirely and use color or material that isn't in the traditional ranking at all.
Which is exactly what video games did. Bronze, silver, gold, platinum, diamond, master, grandmaster, challenger.
Notice how the top tiers almost always abandon metals. Diamond, obsidian, celestial, mythic, legendary. The metal hierarchy provides a foundation of shared understanding, but the truly elite tiers transcend it. It's the same logic as the black card.
The metal ranking is the musical equivalent of beige wallpaper. It's so familiar you don't notice it, but it's doing real work, structuring how we think about tiers.
That's the point that designers and marketers need to understand. If you're building a loyalty program or a game reward system or a certification ladder, the gold-silver-bronze model works because it taps into 5,000 years of cultural conditioning. You don't have to explain it. Everyone already knows where they stand.
If you want to signal that you're doing something genuinely new, you should avoid metals entirely.
Use titanium, carbon fiber, ceramic. Or better yet, use non-material signifiers, color spectrums, geometric shapes, astronomical objects. The moment you use gold, silver, and bronze, you're implicitly saying this is the same kind of hierarchy you've seen your whole life. That might be what you want. But if you're trying to signal disruption, those metals are working against you.
What about wedding rings? The prompt specifically mentioned those.
Wedding rings are a perfect case study. Gold wedding bands go back to ancient Egypt. They believed the circle symbolized eternity, and the gold symbolized the sun's eternal nature. The Romans adopted the practice and spread it through Europe. By the medieval period, the church had formalized gold rings in wedding liturgy. Today, even in cultures that have no Christian tradition, gold remains the default for wedding rings. It's not about religion anymore. It's about the fact that gold doesn't tarnish. A gold ring worn every day for 50 years still looks like itself. A silver ring needs constant polishing.
The material property that made it sacred to the Egyptians is still doing practical work for a married couple in 2026.
That's the through line. The chemistry never stopped mattering. The symbolism got layered on top of the chemistry, but the chemistry is still there, still doing its thing.
Let me ask you something. If we'd evolved on a planet where the most common noble metal was blue, would the hierarchy be completely different?
That's an interesting thought experiment. If gold were blue, it wouldn't have the solar association. The divine connection might have attached to something else. Maybe copper, with its reddish sunlight color, would have been the supreme metal despite tarnishing. Or maybe the whole hierarchy would be based on something other than color, rarity, or hardness, or sonic properties.
The hierarchy is contingent. It's not inevitable. It's the result of specific chemical facts meeting specific human cognitive biases.
Then getting locked in by institutions. That's the three-part mechanism. Chemistry provides the raw material differences. Psychology elevates those differences into preferences. Institutions, religion, money, monarchy, eventually corporations, transform those preferences into a system so durable that we forget it was ever contingent.
The Inca throwing away platinum is my favorite example of this. They had the rarer metal in their hands, and they tossed it because their technology couldn't unlock its value.
That's a humbling thought. What are we throwing away right now because our technology or our conceptual frameworks can't see its value? Every civilization has its unripe gold.
There's a sermon in that.
There really is. Now, let's talk about where this is heading. Because the hierarchy is being challenged from two directions at once.
Digital status and asteroid mining.
On the digital side, we're already seeing the metal hierarchy get transplanted into virtual spaces. NFTs, profile badges, crypto token tiers, they all use gold, platinum, diamond as tier names, despite having no physical material at all. The language persists even when the material constraint is gone. Diamond hands, golden tickets, platinum tier. The metal ranking is so deeply embedded that we replicate it even in purely digital systems where there's no reason to. It's become a cultural meme that reproduces itself regardless of material reality.
Then there's the asteroid mining question.
NASA's Psyche mission is heading to an asteroid that's believed to be the exposed core of a failed planet. It's mostly iron and nickel, but it may contain enormous quantities of precious metals. Some estimates suggest a single platinum-rich asteroid could contain more platinum than has ever been mined in human history.
What happens to the hierarchy if platinum suddenly becomes as common as copper?
That's the billion-dollar question. If Psyche or another asteroid makes platinum abundant, does platinum crash in value? But does it displace gold? Because gold's position isn't just about scarcity, it's about 5,000 years of accumulated cultural weight. You could flood the market with gold tomorrow, and it would still be gold.
The symbolism has decoupled from the scarcity.
Scarcity still matters. If gold were as common as iron, its value would obviously drop. But it wouldn't drop to zero. It would still be gold. It would still be the metal of kings and gods and wedding rings. The symbolic premium would survive even if the scarcity premium collapsed.
The hierarchy is more durable than the material facts that created it.
That's the big takeaway. The metal hierarchy started with real material differences. Gold's color, its chemical stability, its workability. Those differences created symbolic associations that got reinforced by every major human institution for 5 millennia. And now the symbolism is so powerful that it persists even when the material basis shifts or disappears entirely.
Which brings us back to the prompt's question. Have humans always agreed that gold is superior to silver?
The archaeological record says yes, with fascinating exceptions. In ancient Egypt, for a period, iron was more valuable than gold because it could only be obtained from meteorites. They called it iron from heaven. King Tutankhamun was buried with a dagger made from meteoric iron. That's a case where rarity and celestial origin temporarily vaulted a metal above gold. But once iron smelting became common, iron's value crashed and gold reclaimed the top.
The exceptions actually prove the rule. When something briefly outranks gold, it's always temporary, and it's always because of some extraordinary circumstance.
The ranking always snaps back. That's path dependence with teeth.
If someone's designing a tier system tomorrow, loyalty program, game rewards, whatever, what's the practical advice here?
If you want instant comprehension, use the traditional hierarchy. Gold, silver, bronze. Everyone knows what it means. You get cultural legibility for free. But if you want to signal genuine novelty, break the system. Use materials that aren't in the traditional ranking, titanium, ceramic, carbon fiber. Or abandon materials entirely and use colors, shapes, or astronomical objects. The risk of the traditional hierarchy is that it feels tired. The risk of breaking it is that people might not immediately understand the ranking.
The middle path.
The middle path is what American Express did. Start with gold, move to platinum, then break to black titanium. Use the traditional hierarchy as a foundation, then transcend it at the top. That signals both reliability and innovation.
You know what I keep coming back to? Of all the factors, the fact that gold is yellow feels like the most underappreciated part of this story.
It really is. In material science textbooks, they'll talk about nobility and malleability and crustal abundance. Nobody leads with color. But I think color might be the single most important factor. The sun is the most universally worshipped object in human history, and gold looks like solidified sunlight.
That's good. That's good.
I can't take credit for that. The Incas literally described gold as tears of the sun, and silver as tears of the moon.
Now we use those tears of the sun to signal that you get free airport lounge access.
The arc of history is long, but it bends toward loyalty programs.
There's something almost poignant about that. The same metal that covered the Temple of the Sun God now covers the credit card that gets you into the Delta Sky Club.
It's the democratization of status, in a way. Gold used to be reserved for pharaohs and emperors. Now anyone with a decent credit score can carry a gold-colored piece of plastic. The symbolic weight has been diluted, but it hasn't disappeared. It's just been repackaged.
That repackaging is so effective that we don't even notice we're still using Bronze Age value systems to navigate modern consumer choices.
Which is exactly why this topic matters. These hierarchies feel natural. They feel like they've always been there, but they were made. They were made by specific chemical properties interacting with specific human brains in specific historical circumstances. Understanding that gives you the power to use the hierarchy deliberately, or to break it.
To answer the prompt directly, the hierarchy is a function of availability, but not only availability. It's chemistry plus psychology plus institutional lock-in. And the wedding ring example is the perfect distillation. Gold became the default because it doesn't tarnish, because it's beautiful, because it's rare enough to be precious but common enough to be available, and because thousands of years of tradition have made anything else feel like a compromise.
There's one more thread I want to pull before we wrap up. The Bronze Age collapse didn't reset the hierarchy, but the Iron Age did something interesting to copper. Before iron, bronze was the high-tech military material. Swords, armor, chariot fittings. After iron, bronze became decorative. It moved from the battlefield to the art gallery, and that demotion actually solidified its third-place status. Bronze wasn't competing with iron for the top. It had been moved to an entirely different category.
The hierarchy doesn't just rank metals. It assigns them to different domains. Gold is sacred, silver is commercial, copper and bronze are decorative and utilitarian.
That domain assignment is still with us. Gold is for the most important things. Silver is for the everyday valuable things. Copper is for pipes and statues and third place metals.
Copper is for pipes. The same metal that the Sumerians used for sacred vessels is now mostly about plumbing.
Yet it still shows up in the Olympics, in video games, in loyalty tiers. The symbolic role survived even as the practical role shifted. That's resilience.
What do you think happens in a fully digital economy? 100 years from now, when physical currency is gone and most value is stored in bits?
I think the metal hierarchy persists as pure language. We'll still say gold standard and silver tier and bronze medal long after most people have stopped handling physical precious metals. The words will outlive the materials. They already are. Most people who use the term gold master in software development have never held a gold bar.
The gold master is the final version of software before release, the version that's ready to ship.
And the term comes from the music industry. The gold master was the final lacquer disc used to press vinyl records. Before that, it came from film. The gold master was the final color-corrected print. The chain goes back and back, always using gold to mean the definitive, perfect, unchanging version. Because gold doesn't tarnish, the chemistry is still doing the work even when there's no actual gold involved.
That's beautiful, actually. The metaphor survives because the material property is real, even when the material is absent.
That's the deepest answer to the prompt. We associate these metals with desirability because their material properties made them desirable in ways that compound across millennia. Gold isn't arbitrarily at the top. It's at the top because it's the metal that behaves most, like humans wish the world would behave, permanent, beautiful, unchanging. Silver is second because it's almost as good but needs maintenance. Bronze is third because it's useful but visibly imperfect.
We built a value system out of the periodic table.
And we're still living in it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, botanists studying moss reproduction on Sao Tome and Principe coined the term splacnaceous dispersal to describe how certain mosses mimic the scent of dung to attract flies that then carry their spores, and the word splacnaceous derives from the Greek splachnon, meaning entrails or viscera. Because the moss genus Splacnum was originally found growing on animal remains.
Entrail-scented moss. That's a lot to sit with.
This has been my weird prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the show running, and thanks to everyone listening. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.